Welcome to Ticking Each Other Off, with your hosts, Logan and Brent, a podcast about watches, horology, and anything else the boys get to talking about. So sit back, relax, and let our audio waves tenderly massage your eardrums.
Hi everybody, welcome back to Ticking Each Other Off. This is Logan.
And this is Brent.
And today we're going to be talking about how to start a watch collection. This is episode 7 already, pretty hard to believe. So I've been thinking a lot about over the past week. I've added a new watch to my collection, which I'll talk about during this podcast. But I've been thinking a lot about watch collecting and people's motivations to collect watches, why we seem to do it or be so interested in it in the watch community, and what's the best way to go about starting a collection and building up a collection.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about how to build a collection as well as why to start one. Maybe that'll help determine what the best path for you is.
Yeah, so just to give a little outline, there are like three main motivations or philosophies behind people's watch collections. And the first one is an investment. So this is mostly people that are investing, quote unquote, in higher end watches, vintage Rolex, stuff that has been known to appreciate historically. The second is passion. So these are people who just kind of collect watches that they personally find interesting. They don't necessarily will appreciate in value, but they just want to own. And then the third is kind of an accident. And I'd say this is most watch collections are kind of an accident and just a result of accumulating a bunch of watches and then putting them in a watch box. And then all of a sudden you have a collection.
Yeah. I would say a lot of watch collections start like that, and then they kind of go either in the direction of investment or passion from there.
Yeah, because I guess as you accumulate more pieces, sometimes you have to let some go. And in the process, you kind of end up curating a collection of watches that you're more interested in owning than maybe the ones you had initially. And, as you get deeper into the hobby of watch collecting, your collection will slowly become more refined. So the first collection type that we're going to be talking about is collecting watches as an investment.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about, what it means to collect a watch as an investment. We already touched a little bit on what kind of watches you look for when you're looking to collect as investments. And then maybe some of the downsides of collecting as an investment.
Yeah, so in recent years, like the past maybe 3 or 4 years, as prices of vintage watches have seemingly been skyrocketing, a lot more people are talking about watch collecting as an investment, as an alternative to like more traditional forms of investment. And I think this is kind of problematic because, like I said, we're seeing almost bubble-like behavior in the watch market, and I'm not saying it is a bubble. But, I mean, 10 years ago, you could get, a 1675 Rolex, which is like a 70s GMT Master, for $2,000. And now they're well over 15 for nicer examples. So, I mean, if that's not a bubble, I don't know what it is. but I guess you have to see the downside to make it, a complete bubble.
Yeah.
And there's been tons of YouTube videos. One of the most popular or most trending recently watch YouTubers, I'm not going to mention his name, has been basically his videos are just him going to a store and looking at these super expensive watches. Oh, it's a $500,000 watch. And then they're kind of talking about which ones are going to hold their value. And then they're talking about other watches like Grams, which is, a pretty shitty watch brand that basically you buy a watch for $60,000 and then the resale value is immediately $20,000 or less. And then, the guy is saying, oh yeah, you got to buy a Rolex Submariner if you want it to hold its value or increase in value. Talking about how Rolex watches and Patek are like the only good investments. I don't know. What do you think about all this, Brent?
So in general, I think it is kind of dicey. So, I mean, as far as buying objects as investments, watches definitely aren't a bad way to go. But you have to understand it's not going to be as stable or predictable as other forms of investment, because you're investing in something in which the value depends on tastes and preferences, mm-hmm. which are obviously always changing and are very hard to predict. Whereas other forms of investments are going to be based on the overall state of the economy, or there are a lot of other factors we can get into, but any sort of object in general, so watches, cars, investing in those kinds of things do have the potential for huge upside and reward. But it's also not as predictable because you're relying on changing tastes and preferences, and you really don't know where they're going to go.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's potential upside, as we've seen, which is what attracts people to it. You know, we've seen like crazy watches like Paul Newman's and vintage Submariners and GMTs, vintage GMTs go through the roof, which is why people are like, oh my gosh, this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's great for people that bought the watches 30, 40 years ago. But that's not why they bought them, most likely. I mean,
yeah,
it's just something that happened. So it's kind of tough to, I guess it's kind of tough to set out to collect watches as an investment and expect to get that kind of return on investment.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you're talking about with tastes and preferences, super applicable to watches, because you see it with specific models. So like you said, like Rolex, Daytonas, Submariners, GMTs, the sports models are right now some of the most collectible watches. You know, a year ago, Daytonas were the most collectible. But now it seems like it's shifting a little bit to Submariners. And you see like the prices of Daytonas stabilizing a little bit. You've seen the prices of Speedmasters, vintage Speedmasters, stabilizing a little bit. It's really hard to say. You know, people will go on the internet all the time and say, oh yeah, just buy a Submariner, it's a super stable investment. Which I don't think it'll necessarily go down in value. But it's kind of a stretch to call it an investment if you don't know how much or if it's even going to go up in value at all. I think you have to, when you're doing this stuff, you have to look at the opportunity cost, right? So you're spending almost $10,000 on a watch. What else could you be investing in that might have a better upside potential? And I'm not saying you shouldn't buy these watches. I'm saying you shouldn't buy these watches solely as an investment, because it's really probably not your best bet. I mean, you'd be better off putting the money in an index fund or a mutual fund or in real estate or something like that, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Because like I was saying, I mean, it's like, it's more predictable. It's based more on the overall state of the economy. And there are more like predictive factors mm-hmm. for those kind of investments. Mm-hmm. And also they're more, not only are they more predictable, but they're more stable. Especially with something like an index fund, or a mutual fund. You're going to have, you know, it's going to ebb and flow with the economy.
Yeah.
And you can almost, I mean, if you start doing research, you see it's like, oh, it's about 10% a year on an index fund or maybe a little bit more with a mutual fund. So it's like, it's pretty predictable, and you can almost, you're able to expect a certain return on investment per year. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely more predictable, more stable. The problem, you talked about this a little bit. The problem with watches, I think, is that, like I said, in the past few years, we've seen stories of a lot of Rolex sport watches, and then some other brands too, like Patek and some higher end Swiss brands as well, Omega, like the Speedmasters. You've heard stories of, oh, I bought this watch 30 years ago for $800 and now it's worth $24,000. And that's like what's attracting people to watches. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar. I'm not going to really allude to the New York Times article about watches being the new Bitcoin, but it's kind of the same appeal that Bitcoin had. It was like, oh my gosh, I can spend $800 or this much money, and like, you know, 20 years from now, it'll be worth 10 times what I paid for it, or 5 years from now, it'll be worth 6 times what I paid for it. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what's happening right now and what we're seeing. But that's not in general. I don't think that's not the nature of the watch market.
No.
That's just what's happening right now.
Right.
So you have to manage your expectations. If you go into it expecting to quadruple your money, you're probably going to be disappointed. You know, quadruple your money over 10 years, you're going to be disappointed. If you're looking at it as, I want to buy something that's going to hold its value, and I want to be able to buy a watch and enjoy it, but I want it to hold its value. If you're talking about collecting as an investment in terms of just holding its value or not losing a lot of money, then it's definitely reasonable. That's an expectation you can manage. And there are a lot of watches out there that will help meet that expectation, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of funny you mentioned the New York Times article about watches being the new Bitcoin. And, you know, we talked earlier about it kind of having bubble-like behavior. You know, a lot of people will say, no, watches aren't a bubble. I mean, why would the price lower, right? Why would the price ever go down from what it is now? Well, kind of part of the reason that it's so high right now is, one, there's a lot of journalism about watches are the new Bitcoin, right? So you're getting more demand on pieces that are already limited just because they're old and there's not that many examples of them. And then on top of that, you have retailers price jacking watches. And basically, you're going to have, like, you want to buy a vintage Rolex 1675, there's going to be like five middlemen, right? So each person is going to get a cut and it's going to keep going up and up in value. Mm-hmm. And dealers are buying watches from other dealers, marking up even higher. And you're just getting absolutely ridiculous prices, which people are still paying because of the articles that are saying, oh, watches are the new Bitcoin.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to predict future behavior. You know, at some point, people aren't going to pay $100,000 for... People are going to realize it's a little bit ridiculous to pay $100,000 for, you know, a printed dial sports Rolex with not the most impressive movement that's like 40 years old and not even water resistant anymore.
Right. Yeah.
you know, I'm not saying it's not like it's worth it should be worth a lot of money just because of the rarity and because, you know, it's an iconic watch. But you're basically paying for the watch as the idea of the watch more than actually owning the watch. Yeah. Which is, I think, kind of problematic.
Yeah, I agree. I think the value of the watches began to rise initially because of people who were genuinely obsessed with those watches and really wanted them. And they were like, you know, I love a gilt dial 5512 Submariner. Like, I need that watch. I'll pay, you know, 20 grand for it. And then that started snowballing. I'll pay 30, I'll pay 40. And so what you have is like a lot of people initially getting into it because they're obsessed with the watch. And that's like value being driven for the right reasons. And then they become so popular and worth so much. And then, like you're saying, you start to get people that are buying the watches strictly to make money, or people that are buying the watches just because they're worth a lot of money or because of the lifestyle they represent mm-hmm. to that person. And so the more popular those watches get, the more the prices rise. There's value being added to the watch, but it's almost false value because it's not being added for the right reasons. There's not really a purpose behind the value that's being added.
Right.
And that's when it becomes dangerous. And also, I guess, kind of tying it back into the economy in general, watches are a luxury good. It doesn't matter if it's a Rolex or a Seiko 5. It's still considered a luxury good. So theoretically, I mean, like something that you said that made me think of this was, you know, eventually someone's not going to pay $100,000 for a printed Rolex dial. Well, eventually, you know, our economy is doing pretty well right now. You know, all it would take is, you know, a dip in the economy for people to back off of luxury goods in general. That's what happens. And watches would definitely be one of the things to go. I mean, people might start selling their watches, you know, dumping them.
Yeah.
And then there's not a lot of buyers in the market because maybe we're in a slight recession.
Yeah.
So that's all it could take to pop this theoretical bubble. And like I said, and like you said, we don't really want to call it a bubble unless we're sure, but no one's going to call it a bubble until it pops, right? So who knows?
Right. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, you don't really know what's going to happen in the future. I mean, in 20 years, if you're buying for long term and you're going to hold the watches, you say you're like 30 years old right now, and you're going to hold the watches for 20, 30 years and then sell them, which is something I'm going to talk about in a second, is are you really going to sell them? You got to be thinking about what's going to be happening like in our world in 30 years. You know, we're going to have much bigger issues.
Right.
People are going to be living on Mars, probably. There's going to be like huge climate change issues. are people really going to care about your old Rolex watch? Probably not. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's like two kind of examples that I can come up with to compare the vintage watch market right now to. One of them would be the stamp market. So like 50 years ago, people were collecting stamps and people were paying like tens of thousands of dollars for stamps. Which seems ridiculous because it's a piece of paper, but people were doing it. And of course, now nobody wants those stamps, so they're not worth jack. But, you know, it could also be like art collecting. Art, if you buy a nice piece of art from, you know, a well-known artist, it's one of a kind, which makes it different from watches. But those have been, art has been shown to steadily increase in price over time. It has its ups and downs, but there's a lot of historical data to back up the fact that art collecting is... a good investment. So I think right now there's not enough data to show whether or not watch collecting is going to be a sustainable investment long term, because people have only been really collecting watches to the degree that they are right now for, you know, maybe 20 years at the most. That's like cutting edge.
Yeah. So we're just starting to see vintage watches rise in value now, because like you're saying, like 60, 70 years ago, watches were just coming into the light as like a utility. And they certainly weren't anything to invest in, and they weren't even really super, super fashionable, like, you know, 1930s and 40s. If anything, they were just a utility. Mm-hmm. So we're just seeing this cropping up for the very first time. Whereas something like art, like you said, has been around forever, and art collecting and art trading has been around forever. So it's a little bit more stable, more predictable. I would also compare it to, and we've done this before, but I would also definitely compare it to the vintage car market. Because cars have been around for a similar amount of time. They're collectible both for their aesthetic and mechanical functional beauty, I guess. So they're not just aesthetically preferred, but also they have a function. So there's a lot of that balance of like, are you buying it for the function or for the aesthetics or for the history? And we're also kind of seeing vintage cars, I guess towards the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century, we're seeing vintage cars skyrocket in value for the first time as well. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar things happening with the car and the watch market. Yeah.
And I think, you know, probably the biggest reason for that and the biggest way that you can justify the price increase is the scarcity of vintage watches and vintage cars, vintage whatever. Because like you said, when people were buying these things originally, they weren't looking at them as an investment. If they broke, they got parts replaced. Eventually, they'd probably just throw the watch in the trash or something. Because, Rolex wasn't a super expensive watch at the time. It was still relatively expensive, but it wasn't, $10,000. It was more like $1,000 in today's money. So something that I find even more hard to wrap my head around is people who are collecting modern watches and saying, oh, yeah, this no-date Submariner 114060 is going to be worth 5 times its value by the time I'm like 50 years old. Well, that's the thing. Everybody now thinks that, and everybody's collecting watches and everybody's keeping them in perfect condition and not wearing them, putting them in a safety deposit box in the hopes that they'll be worth a ton down the line, which means that, in 50 years, there's going to be tons of these things, just as many as there are today.
Right.
Unlike in the 50s and 60s, when the percentage of watches left now that were around originally is probably more like 5% or less. I'd say now, 50 years from now, if people still think that collecting watches is a good thing, we're probably going to have, 80% of the watches produced today are still going to be around in 50 years.
Yeah. So it goes to what you're saying. Like, they're trying, essentially, people collecting modern watches, even if they are limited, what they're essentially trying to do is replicate what happened 50 years ago mm-hmm. when someone bought a 6542 and put it in their desk and forgot about it for 50 years. And then pulled it out and it's worth, 15 times what it was or 20 times, whatever. They're trying to replicate that. But the problem is the people 50 years ago that happened to, they weren't trying to do that. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
Everyone else used their watch, and there are a few like new old stock examples out there because it wasn't a popular thing to do at the time to just put your watch away as an investment. People didn't do that. It only happened really by accident. So people doing it now, like you said, even if they are trying to, pull the watch out 20 years from now, 50 years from now and say, oh, look, I have a new old stock example. Well, a lot of people are buying modern watches with that mindset. So we're going to end up with just all of those watches being new old stock condition. It's not going to really be special. So trying to replicate something that happened on accident doesn't really work, I guess, is the moral of the story.
Yeah. Definitely. Which brings us to the next part of this is, which is collecting watches for passion instead of as an investment. So kind of the first thing that I wanted to talk about when it comes to collecting watches for passion is going back to an investment, because if you're collecting watches for investment, that means that implies that at some point you're going to sell the watches, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To make your investment. You could pass them on, I guess, and have your kids sell them, but it implies that somebody's going to sell them at some point. So if so, when are you going to do this? If you buy the watches, if you start accumulating watches in your 20s, you get to your 60s, you've been wearing these watches for 40 years, it's going to be pretty hard to let go of them. You're going to have a connection to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it's worth, if you adjust the price for inflation, if it's worth, 10 times the value, probably by that point, you're going to have enough money in your retirement fund anyway. Hopefully you weren't betting on your watch collection to be your retirement fund. and it might be worth, it's probably gonna be worth more to you to keep the watches and have the memories and pass them down through your family than it will be to sell them.
Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, collecting for passion is just a much safer bet. And, you know, we're into watches because of passion. We're not into watches because they're some asset.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, collecting for passion works because, in my opinion, if you're an enthusiast, and honestly, even if you're not a watch enthusiast, you could buy, you know, you could buy a nice, you know, limited edition Speedmaster, and 10 years down the line, oh, you've had a lot of memories with it. It's really cool. You don't see them very often. And it holds a lot of sentimental value. But honestly, you could not be an enthusiast. You could have a quartz Timex and keep it for 10 years, and it could still mean a lot to you. And like, you could be passionate about that watch because of the memories you've built with it. It doesn't even have to necessarily be a special watch per se. Watches are just something that we kind of keep our memories in, and that's what builds the passion ultimately.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big part of it, right? It's the stories that the watches carry. And that's kind of why we like vintage watches so much, is because there's almost a visual representation of the stories.
Yep, exactly. That's true. Yeah, before we move on to passion full blown, there was one more thing I wanted to say about investments in general.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So people buying modern watches in general. What we said, yeah, definitely I don't think it's a good idea to stow them away and predict, oh, they're going to be worth this much in 20 years. There is a little bit of value to buying limited stock modern watches in terms of, or as a short-term investment. Mm-hmm. So like, if you know, I can buy this watch today, not everyone can buy it, not everyone has access to it. You buy it and then stock runs out, and then in a year or like 2 years,
even less,
you might be able to resell it for more.
Yeah.
I think that is probably smart if you want to do that. That's another form of investment, I guess, that we didn't really talk about that much. It's more like flipping, I guess, than investment.
Yeah.
But still like more like a short-term investment nonetheless.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on.
No, that's a good point. It's like shorting a stock instead of going long, right? So like with the limited edition Zodiac Aerospace that they released at Baselworld this year, it was limited to like 100-something pieces. They were 1,600 originally, and now they sold out in a couple days. And already, like less than a month later, the Gulf ones are trading for $2,700. So,
yep.
You know, if you had bought one, you could have made $1,000 easy in, you know, a couple of weeks, which makes me really regret not buying one when I had the chance.
Yeah. And there, so that's a little bit more predictable. Again, it's not surefire, but it is a little bit more predictable. If you have the opportunity to get your hands on a watch that's limited, not even a limited edition necessarily, but limited stock. I mean, Rolex sport watches now, which is crazy, but pretty much all Rolex sport watches brand new. If you can get your hands on one for MSRP, but that is another form of investment that's not banking on, the sentimental value of the watch later on. It's simply flipping the watch and saying, oh, well, it's by virtue of it being limited and it being relatively new, people are going to want it a month from now or 2 months from now.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, kind of jumping back into collecting watches for passion, I think it's easy to get blinded in today's market by people saying, oh, don't buy that watch. It's not going to increase in value. It's a limited edition Omega. You know, it's just going to keep going down because there's too many of them. Oh, don't buy this watch because blah, blah, blah. It's a Squale. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, you should buy this watch. It's a vintage Rolex. Okay, but that watch is $12,000. It's not my budget. Yeah. Anyway, I don't think any of that should matter to you. What you should do is you should go online, or you should go to a watch store in person, or you should go to CurtisRichard.com, and you should look at the watches in the photos and say, how does this watch make me feel? That's how I always choose what watches I want to buy. I mean, I look at a Submariner, and it's a super cool watch, and honestly, if I had the money, I'd probably buy one. But it doesn't give me as much joy as a Seiko Pogue, which honestly is probably blasphemous for me to say. But you know, I like funky 70s colorful watches. And while I think the Submariner is a great watch, and I think it deserves the spot as, you know, the watch to have, for me personally, it doesn't do a ton for me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think I struggled with that a little bit when I first started getting into watches. So, I mean, like, we've talked a little bit about it before, but when I first got into watches, as an enthusiast, not just as someone who wears a watch, I wanted to buy something that had brand recognition, some sort of prestige to it. And that's kind of what I wanted. I think what changed my mind really was when I started getting into vintage watches, I started buying Rakita.
Mm-hmm.
because actually you bought one first and I saw yours. And we talked about a little bit about Rikita in our last podcast and how they're like an awesome watch, cool designs, and they're frankly just very inexpensive for what they are.
Yeah.
And when I saw that watch, the one that you got, I was like, no way. Like, it was this much. There's no way. Like, it's such a cool watch. It's mechanical. The design is super cool. So I started buying Rikita, and you start to realize that, like, out of all the watches, you know, the ones that I wear, like, I went through a period where I had, you know, some nicer watches, and then I had my Rikitas, and I found myself wearing my Rikitas more often than anything else, just because I love the design. It has nothing to do with the value or the brand or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. In like the last, you know, 3 years, I've seen you wearing your Rikitas way more than I've ever seen you wearing your Tag. I've probably seen you wear your Tag like twice, maybe.
Yeah, I don't really wear the Tag that often. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and it should be about your tastes and preferences, because, so, I mean, like, not even as in terms of monetary value or investment value, but just in terms of brand name or brand recognition. That's another thing that comes into play. And that's something you can definitely be passionate about.
Yeah, I agree.
But I, and like, especially for me, I love, you know, like the Rolex brand in general. So it's easy to want just any Rolex, mm-hmm. No matter what Rolex it is. It's easy to want just plain old Oyster Perpetual. But I will say this, even in terms of passion for brand, and how much of an icon the watch is, that even wears off over time.
Yeah.
So if you're buying something just, you know, if you buy like an Oyster Perpetual just because it's a Rolex and it's like, I love the brand, I mean, it's definitely cool, and you can't help but smile when you look down at your wrist. But, you know, after a while, you'll get bored of the fact that, oh, okay, it's a Rolex, yes, but it's really just a watch.
Yeah.
With a crown on the dial. So I think even beyond buying brand, I think buying design or aesthetic or how it makes you feel, which is kind of cheesy, but watches, even objects, any objects can make you feel a certain way. So buy something for the whole comprehensive design and how it makes you feel.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a good transition into the watch that I recently bought, which is a 1960s Zodiac Seawolf 1781W. So it's the one with the Bakelite bezel and the really fluorescent orange chaptering. And this watch, when you look at it from its components, it's never a watch that I would even consider buying. I usually hate orange on watches. And Brent, you probably thought this, like, why the hell is he buying a watch with orange on it? Because I like the Omega Planet Oceans that are all orange. I just hate those. But for some reason on this watch, it works for me. And for some reason, it makes me think of these beach vacations that my family used to take as a kid, and we don't anymore. And I don't know, just looking at it just brings me back to that time. And that's why I bought it. I mean, in addition to the fact that the brand is cool, I mean, they made one of the first dive watches ever, arguably the first dive watch ever. But it's mostly an emotional purchase, right? And I know that I'm going to wear the watch because of that, because it makes me happy to wear it. And I think that all your watches you should buy because you want to wear them, because it's a watch. It's meant to be worn. It's meant to be used to keep the time and, you know, take around with you, travel with, not to have locked away in a bank safety deposit box because you couldn't really afford it and you didn't really want it.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't want to try to force, you know, we don't want to force our opinions on anyone. So I guess me saying, oh, recognition and your passion for the brand on the watch will eventually wear off. That's true for me. It might not be as true for some other people.
Yeah.
But for me, what I found, the watches that I'm truly passionate about and that really stick with me are the ones that remind me of something, make me feel a certain way, or that I just like the overall design of, regardless of who makes it or how much it's worth.
Yeah, that's true. And I think you're right. I mean, brand recognition does have a certain power. Like, you know, one of the probably the main reason I love Rolex is because of the brand's history. When I first got into watches, I looked at the modern designs. I was like, wow, these are horrible. They're so ugly. and something has changed. I don't know if it's my taste or if it's the fact that I know more about the history and like where the watch design, how it evolved into what it is today. That's probably what it is, the only reason that I like the modern designs, because, you know, objectively, they're probably not as good as the vintage designs, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it does play into it, and it has a certain power. but I don't think it should let you overpower the main reasons that you should be buying a watch, which is, you know, to wear it, to enjoy it, and because it triggers some sort of emotion in you.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree.
Okay, so that leads us kind of into collecting vintage watches specifically, and why that has been like both of our primary focus, at least the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So what kind of differentiates vintage watches from modern watches as far as collecting goes for me is kind of the uniqueness of them, right? So I could buy a modern Speedmaster, but in a way I'd have the same watch as, you know, every other watch enthusiast out there. Or I could buy an old Rakita and it would be more one of a kind, more unique to me. And, you know, I searched for the watch for hours and hours and I found the one that I thought was cool. And plus I saved a ton of money. Right. I mean, maybe not long term because of, you know, it's not going to be worth as much in 5-10 years. But in the end of the day, I bought it for the reason that we said that we just talked about.
Yeah, so that's definitely a good point. I think part of, and that's something you mentioned, part of what makes collecting vintage really fun and unique and I guess worth it, or what makes it feel worth it, is the hunt. Like the hunt is part of the fun. Mm-hmm. If I want to buy a brand new Seiko or Hamilton or whatever, I can go to a retailer, I can go online, I can buy that watch in 5 minutes and know exactly what I'm getting.
Yeah,
I know the condition, which is great. I mean, it's reliable and you know exactly what you're getting and it's safe. But hunting for a specific reference number or design of a watch and then hunting for one in the condition that you want it at the right price, that's like something special. And then once you find it online or in person or whatever and you buy it, you feel like it's yours, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's truly yours.
Right. Yeah, and no matter how much you spent for it, you like always feel like you got a deal because it's like the exact one that you wanted, right?
Yeah, you can't put a price on what you really want, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely part of what makes vintage special. I think what we talked about when we were talking about passion, what we talked about was the sentimental value that builds as you own a watch. And that's what makes you passionate about that specific watch. I think that's part of the reason we really like vintage, is because when you buy a watch, a vintage watch, you're also buying the story that comes with it. When you're buying a brand new watch, that watch doesn't really have a story yet. I mean, you might be able to argue if you buy a modern Submariner or a modern Hamilton Khaki Field, you're buying the heritage of that model, which is true. But buying the vintage watch, the vintage example of whatever story you're talking about, you can look at that exact watch and know what it's been through, or think about what it's been through and the heritage of the watches that came out of the factory at the same time as this one. And I think that's really special. So the way it makes us feel and the story are important to us in terms of passion. And vintage watches open a whole new door in terms of inheriting the watch's story. Yeah. And then also adding your story on top of it.
Yeah, and when it comes down to heritage, a big thing for vintage watches is like finding out the year that the watch was made and then like looking at the things that happened that year. Or maybe it's like a birth year watch for you. That's what a lot of people are into.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I love like the 1960s. So buying watches for the 1960s is kind of cool to think of, you know, all the historical events that this watch has lived through that I haven't had the chance to. I don't know. It's just kind of cool. It harkens back to the time period that it was made, and the fact that it still works is kind of a testament to the quality.
Yeah, it's a huge testament to the quality. That's another thing in terms of what it makes you feel like, is you can look at a watch that's ticking in front of you that's 40 years old and think, wow, I mean, this thing is, it's kind of like listening to a wise old man. It doesn't matter what he says, you're going to listen. It's kind of like that when you're looking at the watch. It's like, wow, I mean, it's just, it's got so many stories. It's obviously a good watch just by virtue of it still ticking today. It just carries so much with it. And another thing, like you said, you know, like an Omega Speedmaster, for example, you know, you might be confused because I'm saying, oh, the heritage that it carries with it. And it's like, okay, yeah, well, your specific vintage Speedmaster didn't go to the moon. It's like, yeah, that's true. That is true. But it's still, you know, the watches around it that were being produced at the same time were built for that purpose and could go to the moon.
Right.
And not only that, but not in terms of what your exact watch did, but what it may have done. So like what you said about your Zodiac Seawolf, and it reminds you of the beach vacations your family used to take. You can think about, this watch maybe back in the 70s on a beach somewhere on the wrist of some guy wearing some 70s looking swim trunks, some neon swim trunks on the beach. And then maybe he went into the ocean with it and he had a beach vacation with his family. So just thinking of what the watch may have been through and probably did go through is part of the fun too.
Yeah, I agree. And it's another reason not to shove your watch in a sock drawer and make it a new old stock example in 50 years. Right?
Right.
I mean, that's like, that's part of the reason people find vintage watches so attractive and so collectible is because of the patina and because of, you know, the character that they've developed that modern watches don't have. They have, vintage watches have their own unique character.
Yeah. I mean, if patina didn't make you think about what the watch has been through or the story of the watch, it would just be damage.
Right.
I mean, really, that's really why people like patina.
Yeah.
So I think that is the root of a lot of why people like vintage watches as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So before we wrap up, we're kind of doing a shorter episode today. Before we wrap up, a couple of like tips for buying vintage watches if you're getting into it. And we're not trying to sell our website here, but this is just from our experience. You should buy the best example of that watch that you can afford. But at the same time, also buy the example of the watch that's most attractive to you. So, you know, if you have a certain budget and you can buy a new old stock example of a watch, or you can buy an example of the watch with like a tropicalized dial or a pumpkin patina loom, then, you know, buy the one that you like the most. Sometimes the best condition example is not necessarily the one that you want. And you can save money by buying the more patinated version sometime, but depending on the watch. The second thing is make sure the watch is working, because vintage watches can be a real pain in the ass, honestly. So if you're buying from eBay, you got to be really freaking careful about what you're doing, because people will, and we've had this happen, say the watch is running, you get it, it's not working, and then they disappear, and you don't never get your money back. So, you know, make sure you're buying from a reliable source, and because you don't want to have to deal with that when you get a watch in the mail. You want to just be able to put it on your wrist and enjoy it for what it is. And getting vintage watches service can often be really expensive, you know, because for a lot of the models, the parts aren't readily available. So maybe consider getting something with a more mainstream movement like an ETA if you're not sure about where you're getting it from.
Yeah, I mean, like buying a watch of a company that's still around is a good idea, for example.
Yeah,
buying a watch with a common movement, like you're saying, those are things to think about. Still, like we said, we definitely want to push for buy what you want. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've had watches. I had a watch that I bought. It didn't work. And I thought, oh, I mean, it's a quartz watch. It's a Gruen. I mean, it was my watch. So I was like, I mean, surely, you know, I can just fix it. It's not that hard. And I looked for parts. I took it to a jeweler. They looked for parts. The parts, the movement, it just didn't exist. And I just had to write the watch off.
Yeah.
It was kind of sad because it was a cool watch. But it does happen. I mean, even, you know, you can be really careful and try to do research on who you're buying from and what you're buying. And it can still come to bite you in the back, and you just have to be as careful as you can. It happens to everyone, but just be as careful as you can, do your research. And another thing, when you said buy the best example, I mean, ideally, yes, if you can buy the watch that you want, combine buying the watch that you really want with buying something that's a good example, it's going to hold its value better.
Mm-hmm.
So like we said, we don't want you to buy wherever you want or for whatever reason you want. But if you're buying for passion and you can also buy something that's going to hold its value, that's great. So try to maximize that holding its value factor as well when you buy for passion.
Yeah, especially if it's a more expensive watch, you know.
Yeah.
Then it's something to definitely think about, because if you're dropping 10K on a watch, you're going to want it to at least hold its value.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of wrapping the whole thing up kind of where we started. So the episode was titled How to Start a Watch Collection. So I think maybe one of the most important things you can do when starting a collection and thinking about your specific collection and what you're going to have in it is to spend a little bit of time like getting to know different brands and branching out from what you'd normally look at, because inevitably if you buy something, you're going to want something else in a month or two. So, yeah. don't buy the first thing that pops up, you know, especially if it's expensive and you spend all your watch money on it, because then you're just gonna end up selling it to get something else. Spend a little bit of time looking around, getting to know what you like, finding, you know, maybe five watches that you really want, and then spreading out your purchases over the next couple of years, and then you'll have the collection that you want, instead of, you know, jumping the gun and buying stuff that you like at the time, but, you know, in a couple months you might not like it as much.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, and that's what buying for brand recognition, that's where that kind of comes into play, because you might buy a watch that you spend a lot of money on, a watch that you like just because of the brand, and then a month later you realize, you know, the watch isn't really the kind of watch you wanted. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you involve yourself in just looking at watches a lot, doing research, looking at different brands, you're going to find the watch that you really want. Mm-hmm. And Lord knows, like, with both you and I, our tastes have changed multiple times over the last couple of years as far as what we like and what we don't like.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen naturally over time anyway. But if you really rush in and buy something, like, it might be a week later and you regret it. So before yeah. you know that much about watches. And that's kind of, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the main thing. That's another reason when I say maximize a watch that'll hold its value, still buy for passion, but maximize the holding its value factor. That's important because if you're passionate about watches and you want to sell that watch a couple years later and get something else, you can, because you can get your money back and have the money to buy something else. You don't want to lose all your money and then not be able to buy another watch.
Right. Right. Especially if your tastes change. And, you know, at the end of the day, watches are tools. Watches are maybe art. I don't know. but what they really are just toys. So, you know, as a kid, you buy the toys that you want the most. So buy the watch that you want the most, because you're going to get the most enjoyment out of it.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, just buy what you want is the bottom line, really. What you really desire.
Yeah, we could have just we could have saved like 40 minutes and just said, you know, just buy whatever watch you want, man.
Yeah, but I think going into the other reasons people buy watches and talking about the pros and cons really funneled us into that decision or that, yeah. that mindset. So we were kind of taking our experiences with watch collecting and other people's experiences that we've seen, and just kind of telling you guys what we've seen in our experience. Maybe it'll save you some headache and some heartache down the road and some money. yeah, so that's kind of,
yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. We'll be back next week, with episode 8. Follow us on social media at Ticking Each Other Off is our podcast Instagram, at Curtis Plus Richard is our main Instagram. Our website is curtisrichard.com. We also have Facebook. We're working on YouTube. Some other exciting news coming soon. We have a Pinterest, if you're into that. We have all kinds of stuff. Check it out. All the links are on our website. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys and gals next week.